Andrew Nyberg is a poet and a lecturer on our campus, the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. His collection of poems, The Goats Have Taken Over the Barracks, will be released in March. Andrew, thanks for joining us.
No, thank you for having me.
Tell us more about this book.
Well, I've been working on it on and off for almost 10 years now. Half of the piece is set on or in or around Tennessee, and the other half is set on East Island, Croatia. And in a lot of ways, the story of the collection is one of self-discovery, of understanding how somebody's identity can span to such different areas that also have a lot of similarities between them.
Tell us about a few of the similarities.
Well, one of my favorite parts of living here in Tennessee is the living in the foothills. I grew up in New Hampshire, so I kind of always was accustomed to the sight of mountains, and it was very welcoming here in Tennessee to see something very similar, but honestly, a great deal warmer. Croatia also is characterized by low mountainous terrain. The brush is a little bit scrubber, a little drier there, but I felt like the topography had a lot in common. I saw a lot of very similar creatures, the same types of insects. And as a result, the aesthetic of being on the island felt a lot like sitting in the foothills on a hot Tennessee night.
Tell us how and why you came to tie these two very different places together.
Some of it comes back to one of my instructors when I was really trying to establish myself as a poet, the author Art Smith. He was always a huge inspiration for me. He taught at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, and passed about 2 years ago. I communicated with him throughout the course of the composition of this entire collection, actually. A couple of the poems even began in his classroom. And one thing that Art had always encouraged very strongly are large associative leaps and trying to make meaning out of those connections. And so early on, as I was starting to form my identity as a poet and thinking about experiences I'd had that might relate, both my attempts to acclimatize myself to the Tennessee environment and then also discovering my heritage in Croatia coincided really strongly with each other. When I first moved to Tennessee, actually, I very much missed New Hampshire, and it took some time for me to decide that I was a Tennessean. And so I started having these two sort of central elements to my identity. And to some extent, I simply wanted to forge a connection between those, to sort of pull these two halves of myself together. And that became, in a lot of ways, a central project of this collection of poems.
And this is your first collection of poems. When did you know that you had something here that was capable of being a collection?
Oh, no, that's a tough question. So this is my first full-length collection of poems. I did have a chapbook of poems called Easy to Lose, which was a book of conversations I wrote sitting out on my front porch with insects and frogs and things like that that I would see around me. And this new collection had started in a very similar way. Initially, the chapbook was, again, a conversation with small creatures. This one was more a conversation with summer nights, is the way I would put it. And so I started pulling those elements together. So I composed a number of poems that were sort of related to that theme, using a lot of heat images, images of things like the birds I was watching. Various cicadas are a pretty heavy theme in my work. Then I started, as I was also composing separately kind of scattered poems set in Croatia, I started noticing another overlap, which was images of heat, and especially heat at night, and listening to the sounds of nature around me. And a couple of key poems had started to pull the thing together. I realized even that I had a couple of poems I'd written here in Tennessee that could just as easily have been set in Croatia if I had named the specific places. And so that was kind of the marriage point. And so there were a couple of particular poems that really stood out as the anchors or the connections between the two halves of the book.
You touch a lot on fragility in this collection.
Well, in a lot of ways, I've had a fairly fortunate life in that I've not experienced a great deal of personal losses. So my immediate family, for example, has had very few disasters. I've known a lot of folk who've lost friends to accidents, unexpected illnesses. And of course, you know, this is 2020, which would change that even further. But as a whole, though, I lost one of my grandparents to cancer. But it was a very long time coming. My grandfather on my mother's side also died of a heart condition. But again, these were all expected losses. And at the same time, I always felt like I was watching people around me from an advantaged position where I was lucky to have these things not affecting me, whereas so many people I was surrounded with had just devastating losses. And I often sort of helped people through as a, you know, listener or friend as they were struggling with various different major crises. And so it just became something I spent a lot of time thinking about. And I felt like I was watching it from afar, but that also kind of always kept it on my peripheral vision. And a lot of my poetry is very observational in nature, where I will pick something in my environment to write from. So I'll sit out on my porch a lot of nights and just look at a streetlight and decide to make that the subject of my evening's thoughts. When I traveled to the island in Croatia, I'd sit at the cafe and watch the water, or I'd sit on the pier at the other side of the island and just look at the mountains and things like that. And then I'd just begin writing on those subjects. And so I really started to see all of these things, like my life seemed really stable and strong, but I saw all these things around me that made it feel really brittle and like the slightest wrong breath could just suddenly shatter everything.
As you were compiling this collection, which poets would come to mind? Which verses from other poets would come to mind?
Well, this collection definitely had a couple of guiding poets. I did mention already Art Smith in the collection, The Fortunate Era. Honestly, to me, in some ways, it's my poetry Bible. It's the one that really inspired me to, I don't know, see my aesthetic in a particular light of how I worked with images and ideas like science and nature. But I also was a tremendous fan of the work of the late poet Jack Gilbert. I was fortunate enough to have him as a guest instructor at UTK. He was one of the first poets who I really just fell in love with as an author, where I would just revisit his collections, The Great Fires and Refusing Heaven, over and over and over. And whenever I was doubting what I needed to do next in a poem, I'd open one of those books to a random page and be like, okay, so what did Jack do? Also, he was a poet of isolation as well, which in some ways has always struck me as worth pursuing as an observational poet. But then both James Wright and Robert Hass were huge inspirations as well. And then I studied under a trio of poets while I wrote most of this collection. Kathleen Driscoll and her collection, Laughing Sickness, was pretty influential. And then I was working with Deborah Kang Dean and Molly Peacock as well. I would say in a lot of ways, even though there's very little formal poetry in this collection, my work with Molly Peacock, where I studied form under her at Spalding, was enormous in shaping my decisions for how these poems were presented on the page. So there's a lot of different things I was reading, but those were kind of the big ones. Mostly Jack Gilbert, Art Smith for sort of my aesthetic, but then I learned so much about craft and technique from Kathleen, Deborah, and Molly.
And we should explain, without giving too much away, the title of this collection.
Up on East Island, Croatia, there's two mountains that the body of the island is made of, and the village sits in the center of the two mountains. On one mountain, there's a small church, and on the other, there's an abandoned military outpost. One of the reasons I decided to set, or I was so fascinated by the setting, was the almost immediate metaphorical connotations of one mountain having the church and one mountain having the military. I couldn't help immediately seeing some resonance between the image there. But the abandoned military outpost has since been overrun by a large herd of goats, and all of the doors and windows are broken out, so they just move freely in and out of the buildings. They sleep on some of the broken down, discarded furniture. Honestly, to a certain extent, there's just something wonderful about the image of something harsh, like a military barracks, just being reclaimed so thoroughly by living creatures and the natural world.
What do you hope people who read this collection take from it, especially during these times?
Probably the biggest thing, coming back to that sense of fragility, would be a reminder, first off, of our fragility, that as strong and capable as we are as a species, that we are surrounded by a world that dwarfs our capabilities with its complexity. As much as we understand the vastness of everything around us, I mean, our knowledge has yet to reach the corners of it by a long shot. But also just a respect for that natural world as a result. I don't want us to be frightened of the awesomeness of nature. I do think that it's important for us to build a relationship with nature, and that requires respect and feeling like we are a part of it and not something that should be setting ourselves against it. Especially in the modern day, as we see so many people fighting against science and fighting against fact, you know, I really hope that people can see a positive message about how we can interact with the world and not be overrun by it.
And where can people go online to keep up on all that you do beyond the collection?
I do run a Twitter and Facebook page. My Twitter handle is at Andrew Nyberg, and you can look me up at Andrew Nyberg Author on Facebook. I do keep a regular series of posts on both. And the Facebook series is primarily focused on presenting images of East Island to help people understand the context of the book, as well as some of the history of the places that appear inside it. And I'm actually planning on running a new series shortly once that one exhausts about places in Tennessee that the poems are set as well. Also, I do have a few recorded videos of readings of poems on YouTube. I've most recently posted a couple of poems, one called Fighting for Me, one of my favorite poems I've composed called Reverence, which was about the University of Tennessee Knoxville's body farm. It's always been one of my favorite pieces that's had sort of a near and dear place in my heart.
All right, Andrew, thanks so much.
All right, thank you very much.
Next Thursday at 6:30 p.m. on Zoom, Andrew will read from his collection, joining fellow poets Jeff Harden and Jesse Graves for an evening of poetry. Details on Andrew's website and Facebook page.